Welcome everyone to today's episode of Krishna in Vrindavan. Today we're going to be, this is episode 18, and we'll be speaking on the power of Krishna's transcendental flute playing. So, Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Rakshama. Krishna, 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 Pahimam. Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rakshamam. Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Pahimam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. All right, so we're looking at count of 10. We'll start a little bit with some verses from chapter 20, because we don't want to totally skip that chapter. But chapter 20 is describing the rainy season and the beginning of autumn in Vrindavan. So there's no actual pastimes of Krishna there, but it's just describing these seasonal changes in Krishna's holy land of Vrindavan. So we saw that our last session was Krishna swallowing the forest fire, and we're explaining how that happened in the summer, and that's why there was a forest fire, because everything was so dry and then the wind was blowing and the bamboos rub together and they start a fire. So that happens in the summer, but then after the summer comes the rainy season. So the rainy season, the clouds form overhead and the rains come bucketing down almost every day, accompanied by thunder and lightning. So it's a very beautiful season, which gives relief from the scorching heat of the long, hot, dry summer season in Vrindavan. So I'm going to, and in these verses in chapter 20, Shukadeva Goswami very artistically and poetically, he relates almost all of the descriptions of the Vrindavan environment to some philosophical point or something that relates to practical devotional service or the situation in the material world in Kali Yuga or something like that. He uses them to make some deeper point. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, the book Light of the Bhagavat is based entirely on this chapter. Chapter 20 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10. So I'm not going to read the whole chapter, but I'll just select a few verses here that are really beautiful, just to give you a sense of what this chapter is like. And then I encourage you to go on your own and read these verses that are very wonderful, and especially Prabhupada's commentaries in the Light of the Bhagavat. So it says here, this is text 4. The sky was then covered by dense blue clouds accompanied by lightning and thunder. Thus the sky and its natural illumination were covered in the same way that the spirit soul is covered by the three modes of material nature. So you can see how he's bringing out these philosophical points. That's text 10. With the advent of the rainy season, the insignificant streams, which had become dry, began to swell and then strayed from their proper courses, like the body, property, and money of a man controlled by the urges of his senses. And he strays from his path of duty, just like these overflowing streams. Text 13. As all creatures of the land and water took advantage of the newly fallen rainwater, their forms became attractive and pleasing, just as a devotee becomes beautiful by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. We experience that when we see people come to Krishna consciousness, that they become more beautiful as time goes by. Text 15, just as devotees whose minds are absorbed in the personality of Godhead remain peaceful, even when attacked by all sorts of dangers, the mountains in the rainy season were not at all disturbed by the repeated striking of the rain-bearing clouds. And 16, during the rainy season, the roads, not being cleansed, became covered with grass and debris and were thus difficult to make out. These roads were like religious scriptures that the Brahmins no longer study and that thus become corrupted and covered covered over with the passage of time. So these are very deep philosophical points that are nice to meditate on related to the rainy season. So like this, he goes on to talk about the clouds, the lightning, the rain, the trees, the frogs, the cranes, the peacocks, the glowworms, all these different elements that manifest in the rainy season and some spiritual relevance to them. And then as the chapter progresses, then the rainy season gradually comes to an end and the autumn season comes. So the autumn season is when the sky clears, the rain stops, the land starts to come back to normal, not flooded and muddy everywhere. And the autumn season is very beautiful now, because now the heat of the summer is gone, but the inconvenience of the rain is also gone. And so now it's just cool and dry and clear and beautiful. So that the autumn season in Vrindavan is everyone's favorite season. So I'll read a few of these autumn verses. Now we've jumped forward to text 40. With the arrival of autumn, the ocean and the lakes became silent, their waters still, just like a sage who has desisted from all material activities and given up his recitation of Vedic mantras. So the sage who comes to the path of devotional service, and now he no longer engages in material activities and he doesn't need to study the Vedas anymore, these Karmakanda portions, but he's completely peaceful, just doing bhakti yoga. Text 42, the autumn moon relieved all creatures of the suffering caused by the sun's rays, just as wisdom relieves a person of the misery caused by his identifying with the material body. And as Lord Mukunda relieves Vrindavan's ladies of the distress caused by their separation from him. So now towards the end of this chapter, Shukadeva Goswami is already moving into some references to the gopis' love for Krishna. Because the next chapter is the gopis glorify the song of Krishna's flute. So it's all about the gopis and their feelings of love for Krishna, and their feelings of separation that pull at their hearts so strongly when they hear his flute playing. So he's building up to that. And then we're going to read text next few ones. Free of clouds and filled with clearly visible stars, the autumn sky shone brilliantly, just like the spiritual consciousness of one who has directly experienced the purport of the Vedic scriptures. Their consciousness shines brilliantly like the stars in autumn. Text 44. The full moon shone in the sky surrounded by stars, just as Sri Krishna, the Lord of the Yadu dynasty, shone brilliantly on the earth surrounded by all the Rishnis. So Krishna is like the full moon and his associates are all like stars shining there in the sky. Then let's go to text 47. O King Parikshit, when the autumn sun arose, all the lotus flowers blossomed happily, except the night-blooming Kumud. Just as in the presence of a strong ruler, everyone becomes fearless, except the thieves. So it's very sweet. The sun rose and the lotus flowers became happy. It's like when there's a good king, then all the citizens become fearless and happy. But the only flower that didn't bloom was the night-blooming Kumud. So in the same way, the thieves who prowl around at night aren't happy when the sun rises. And the next one. In all the towns and villages, people held great festivals, performing the Vedic fire sacrifice for honoring and tasting the first grains of the new harvest. So yeah, in the autumn is the harvest season. So people are having these harvest festivals, along with similar celebrations that followed local custom and tradition. Thus the earth, rich with newly grown grain and especially beautified by the presence of Krishna and Balaram, shone beautifully as an expansion of the Supreme Lord. So here the whole earth is very beautiful in the autumn, and especially in Vrindavan, and especially when Krishna and Balaram are personally present there. So like this now. And the other thing about the autumn season is that the autumn season is, when Krishna has the rasa dance with the gopis. So that's also coming up in the future chapters, not too far away. So Krishna, everyone kind of gets into the mood, sort of a romantic mood during the autumn season. Okay, so let's go straight into chapter 21 now. The gopis glorify the song of Krishna's flute. So I'll read these verses. I'll just probably read all these verses and then we can talk about them a little. There are only 20 verses in this chapter, it's kind of short. So Sukadeva Goswami is narrating here. Thus, the Vrindavan forest was filled with transparent autumnal waters and cooled by breezes, perfumed with the fragrance of lotus flowers growing in the clear lakes. The infallible Lord, accompanied by his cows and cowherd boyfriends, entered that Vrindavan forest. So, yeah, during the rainy season, everything is just so wet and muddy that often the cowherd men don't take the cows out. So, during that time, Krishna was staying at home and the cows were staying in the Goshala. And so now that everything is dried up and is, passable again, then Krishna is again going out to the forest with the cows. And so this is a big occasion. So then the lakes, rivers, and hills of Vrindavan resounded with the sounds of maddened bees and flocks of birds moving about the flowering trees. Yeah, because the autumn season, during the rainy season, before the rainy season, it's all just dry. The earth is just dry and scorched and dusty. But when the rains come, then everything just springs back to life. At least my experience of living in Vrindavan for many years, that I mean, of course, in the time of Krishna in Vrindavan, it was different because we talked about how summer showed this characteristics of spring. But nowadays, generally, like it just gets really dry, like a desert. And then when the rain comes, all that so much water just soaks the earth. It's just bringing life back to all the trees and plants and people and animals, everybody. And then when that goes away, then everything is just lush. The beginning of autumn, everything is at its maximum peak of just luxuriousness in the forest and the landscape. It's so green and vibrant. The flowers are blooming. And so there's all this fragrance in the air. And that makes the bees go mad because the bees during the whole summer, they were kind of like starved because all the flowers dry up. And then during the rainy season, it's hard for them to fly because it's raining all the time when they get wet. They don't like to fly in the rain. But the autumn is just like clear and every day is sunny. Every day is beautiful. All the flowers in full bloom and the bees just go wild. So the bees are buzzing like anything. And the birds are also moving about in the flowering trees because they're eating those buds and also the little fruits that are starting to grow in the autumn. And there are grains in the fields now. So the birds are going all over and feasting on nature's bounty during the autumn season. So it says, in the company of the cowherd boys and Balaram, Madhupati, Sri Krishna, entered that forest. And while herding the cows, he began to vibrate his flute. So Krishna also is very happy that this autumn creates just a mood of festivity in Vrindavan. And Krishna is very happy to be out and about again. And he's celebrating the occasion by playing his flute. They hear the name Madhupati. Actually, Shukadeva Goswami, he's already, like I said, he's already thinking about this. Because previously it was, we heard about Kumara, Krishna's Kumara age, and the predominance of Vatsalya Ras. And then we heard about Krishna's Pogonda age, where he's playing with the cowherd boys, and that Sakya Ras becomes the main thing. But now Krishna is grown up a little more, and he's coming into the beginning of his Kaishora period, where the Madhurya Ras, his relationship with the gopis of Vrindavan, becomes prominent. So Shukadeva Goswami is, as he starts narrating these pastimes, he has to kind of tone things down. So there are some verses where he's getting excited about Madhurya Ras, like here. And that's why he calls Krishna Madhupati, because Madhupati, Madhu means honey and also means sweetness. And Pati means the Lord. So it literally means the Lord of sweetness, Krishna, my sweet Lord. So Krishna is our sweet Lord, and he's also the Lord of sweetness. So this is indicating that Shukadeva Goswami is going to speak about this very sweet, the supremely sweet Madhurya Rasa. And I actually have tons of notes from this section because when, in my Bhaktivedanta classes, it's like we would have a 2-hour class on just the first four verses, and then another 2-hour class on just verses 5 and 6, and then another 2-hour class on just verses 7 to 9. So impossible for me to include everything here in this short discourse.
I'm ready for a 2-hour class, Prabhupada Priya.
I know, but we have another program at 5. Anyways, let's see. So, where to even start? Anyways, let's just go. Well, one thing here is that when Krishna entered the forest, he was playing his flute in harmony. That's why it's described how the birds are moving and the bees are buzzing. So Krishna's playing his flute in harmony with all the sounds of the forest creatures. And the birds are also there singing in time, and the bees are buzzing. And so it's like a whole orchestra, you know, with the different instruments playing all in a harmonious way. So all the noises of these forest creatures and Krishna's playing his flute, it's creating this, symphony, this symphony celebrating the festive occasion of the arrival of autumn and the budding of Krishna's Madhurya Rasa. That's very beautiful. And Prabhupada says an irresistible heavenly vibration was created. We can just imagine the mood. So then, when the young ladies in the cowherd village of Raj heard the song of Krishna's flute, which arouses the influence of Cupid, some of them privately began describing Krishna's qualities to their intimate friends. So Krishna was in the forest and the gopis were in the village, but that flute sound was so potent that it traveled to their ears. Yeah, it traveled all the way to their ears. And the gopis are just overwhelmed because they've known Krishna since, they were in the village together as little babies, little toddlers playing outside together, in the mud and watching Krishna grow up and them also growing up with Krishna. And now, as time has passed, their relationship with Krishna has become very, it's changed from one of just being around him in sort of a more neutral sense of playing with him. And now they've all grown up and they're attracted to him in the conjugal rasa. So, and this sound of Krishna's flute, it acts just like Cupid, who shoots the arrow into the heart and makes you fall in love with someone. So the flute's going in their ears, just like Cupid's arrow going in their heart, and it's awakening a very intense love for Krishna and desire to be with Krishna. So then they want to talk about him because they know all about Krishna. They have so many things to say about Krishna, even though they haven't, as lovers, they haven't interacted with him apart from, just some sidelong glances as he comes back from the forest. And there in the village or on the rooftops, and just looking at him and smiling, and he's looking back and smiling, but they're having to be very, shy and discreet and private about the whole thing. They've never actually like spoken to Krishna. They never had an opportunity to express their feelings to Krishna or anything. It's all just completely just been remote. There's so much that they want to say about Krishna. It's like, when you're in love with someone and you just want to go to the top of the mountain and announce it to the whole world. And, you see that when young boys and girls are in love with each other, they write the person's name all over their notebooks and all over their bodies. And it's like they're just always thinking of that person and wanting to talk about them and getting excited about meeting them and anything that's connected with them. Just reminds them more intensely of the person and is something makes them want to talk about them. So this is the situation with the gopis, that they're just like really in love with Krishna. and they want to speak about him. But the problem is that they can't speak about him. They can't even talk about him because of these social restraints. Nobody can know about their love for Krishna. Because some of these gopis are already, married. Because that time they used to marry the girls really young, like before puberty. So some of these girls were already married, and it was just impossible, living with their husbands and living with their in-laws to say anything about their love for Krishna. And then another reason why they couldn't speak was that they were just, some of them were just stunned in ecstasy. They just couldn't get the words out. They wanted to say something, but they couldn't. They're just like, So that was their situation. The power of Cupid disturbed their minds, and thus they could not speak. And Shukadeva Goswami says, but they're remembering their activities, because remembering Krishna's activities, all these, just like sometimes we're in kirtan, we'll be in a really nice kirtan, especially if it's a meditative one, not like the wild one we had last night, but a more like soft meditative kirtan, slow one. You actually like you can sometimes just close your eyes, and some pastimes of Krishna will manifest in your mind according to the mood of the kirtan. Even if it's a fast kirtan, then a different pastime will manifest. Something more lively, like Krishna wrestling with the cowherd boys, or Krishna fighting with a demon, or something like that. Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So according to the mood of the kirtan, you sometimes get these meditations flowing.
I think you went through the whole Bhagavatam last night, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So the gopis, so the same thing was happening to the gopis, that when they heard Krishna's flute, according to the melody of Krishna's flute, then they would remember specific pastimes that they witnessed, or that they heard about, that they saw with Krishna growing up in Vrindavan. So now the next verse describes Krishna's beautiful transcendental form. And this, the acharyas explain that this verse is explaining why the gopis were so stunned, because when they heard the flute, they remembered Krishna's beautiful form. And the form which they remembered is this one here, that wearing a peacock feather ornament upon his head, blue Karnikara flowers on his ears, a yellow garment as brilliant as gold, and the Vaijayanti garland. Lord Krishna exhibited his transcendental form as the greatest of dancers as he entered the forest of Vrindavan, beautifying it with the marks of his footprints. He filled the holes of his flute with the nectar of his lips, and the cowherd boys sang his glories. So, yeah, this is, they're meditating on Krishna as the greatest of dancers. This is very specific because this is their desire. They have this, they want to dance with Krishna. Their heart's desire, they just want to. They want to be close to Krishna. They want to touch Krishna. They want to hold his hand and swing around and dance with Krishna. This is their meditation. And just the thought of that is driving them mad, is making them stunned, speechless. And also just the descriptions here of what he's wearing. It's not mentioning his golden ornaments, his valuable jewels, and all those things. But it's describing him as that. Krishna in the forest. It's not Krishna in the town or in the village. It's Krishna in the forest, where who cares about the gold and jewels? He's wearing blue Karnikara flowers. He's got these little flowers tucked behind his ears, and he's got the peacock feather on the hair, the one that he picked up, when he entered the forest. And the Vaijayanti garland that, the boys strung for him from the forest flowers, or maybe the girls strung for him from forest flowers and arranged one of the boys to take to him. So, and they've seen Krishna. They've heard about Krishna's dances, because all these girls have brothers who go out and play with Krishna. And so when the boys come home, then they talk about, oh, yeah, we were really, because we were talking about how they dance. They all play their musical instruments, they have their, jam sessions, and how they dance in wonderful ways. And so the boys describe this, and the girls are like, oh, why can't we be there? We want to dance with Krishna too. So it says here in the purport that Krishna's artful way of dressing and the beautiful blue flowers in his ears excited the gopis' romantic desires. and as he poured the nectar of his lips into his flute, they simply lost themselves in ecstatic love for him. Yeah, that's another thing too, because it says he filled the holes of his flute with the nectar of his lips. So the gopis are hearing the sound and they're thinking of the flute and they're thinking of how that flute is connected to Krishna, and it's connected through his lips, that he holds the flute to his soft pinkish lips, which are colored like the bimba fruit. And they're just, so their meditation goes from the sound to the flute to his lips. And so that's what they're thinking of, how he fills the holes of his flute with the nectar of his lips. And so they also want to get that nectar of Krishna's lips, as we're going to hear them saying. So,
okay. I relate to this because as a musician, you can really express yourself through the instrument. And so much so for Krishna.
Yeah.
There's so much communication in music.
Definitely. Yeah. And later, we're going to hear about later when Krishna uses his flute to actually call the gopis for the rasa dance. He's playing the flute and they're hearing their names. Each one of them is hearing, in that flute song, they're hearing their own names being called. So we can understand it. So let's see. O King, when the young ladies in Vraj heard the sound of Krishna's flute, which captivates the minds of all living beings, they all embraced one another and began describing it. So the last line here of the Sanskrit, Varna Yantyo Bhire Bhire. Varna Yantya means engaged in describing, and Abhire Bhire means embracing one another. So this is explained in different ways by different acharyas, and sometimes in different ways by the same acharyas. In other words, it can be understood in a variety of ways, all of which are simultaneously true. This is the wonderful thing about the Bhagavatam, and that's why it's nice to really study these commentaries. So one understanding of this last line describing describing the sound of Krishna's flute and embracing one another could be that the gopis, hearing Krishna's flute, which carries the message of Krishna's love for them, are embracing Krishna in their minds. That all of them in their minds are simultaneously embracing Krishna. Another interpretation can be that the gopis embrace the sound of the flute with their ears and heart. So they really just opened up their ears, just like when you embrace someone, you open your arms. So they were opening their ears and opening their hearts and embracing that sound within the core of their being. Then another interpretation could be that the gopis embraced each other. So they were all hearing, they were all together, you know, in the village, and they were hearing the sound of Krishna's flute and they embraced each other, because as each gopi describes her feelings of love for Krishna, they embraced each other's love. Their common love for Krishna was something that they adored about each other. You know, just like with devotees, when we meet a devotee who has a similar mood in loving Krishna or is doing a particular service in a way that is just so focused and enlivening and admirable, it's like you just want to embrace that devotee, you know, because you resonate with them. You resonate with their mood towards Krishna. You resonate with their the feelings that they have in their service. So in the same way, all these gopis, they have a similar feelings for Krishna. And so there's natural affection, because in Vrindavan, there's no envy. You know, in the material world, they would be envious. They would hate each other. They would be competing with each other. But it's not like that in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, they stimulate each other's love for Krishna by their own love for Krishna. So they embrace each other for that reason. And then the fourth one that I have heard of is that because here Shukadeva Goswami is describing the pastimes of the Maharaj Parikshit, who, you know, he has 7 days left to live. And Shukadeva is becoming overwhelmed with love for Krishna as he describes these pastimes. And he becomes so grateful to Maharaj Parikshit for giving him the opportunity to speak about Krishna that he takes Parikshit by the hand and lifts him up and embraces him. So that's the relationship between the speaker of the Bhagavatam and those who hear attentively and who hear with taste, who are hear with relish. That you know, the speaker, just as the hearers appreciate the speaker appreciates the hearers, you know, when both are qualified. So Shukadeva Goswami felt so indebted to Parikshit for giving him the opportunity to speak and for being such an avid listener that he embraced him. So like this, we see that love for Krishna is stimulated in different ways and it expands unlimitedly. That your love for Krishna overflows to all those who love Krishna and even to those who don't. You want to try to awaken their love for Krishna. So getting back to the verses here, text 7. So now the cowherd girls are, now the gopis are going to speak. They're actually going to speak. But the thing is that although they want to speak about Krishna, they can't speak directly about Krishna. So they're going to speak about Krishna's flute because anybody could, you know, anybody could say, oh yeah, that person's, let's say there's somebody that you really like and they're good at playing a musical instrument and you happen to go to a concert where they're playing. So you could make any comment under the sun, unlimited comments about their musical talent, right? Oh, just see how he hit that note. Or, you know, you played that so beautifully, or whatever, you know? And anybody could say that, whether they have a personal relationship with the musician or not. So the gopis are thinking, we can't talk about Krishna, but we can glorify his flute playing. So that's what they're going to try to do. Okay, so text 7. The cowherd girl said, oh, friends, those eyes that see that, of course, they're not only going to glorify the flute, they're also going to let leak. They're gonna leak a little bit out. Those eyes,
Prabhupada Priya, why can't they glorify him in general?
because they're not married to Krishna, they're unmarried girls, and Krishna's an unmarried boy. And in that culture, you know, you didn't express your feelings towards some, you know, member of the opposite sex that you weren't married to.
It's lame. All right.
It was very difficult. Kind of like if you're in Krishna house ashram and you have feelings for one of the members in the other ashram, you have to keep it quiet. All
You
right.
can glorify their musical talent.
Exactly. Oh, friends, those eyes that see the beautiful faces of the sons of Maharaj Nanda are certainly fortunate. As these two sons enter the forest surrounded by their friends, driving the cows before them, they hold their flutes to their mouths and glance lovingly upon the residents of Vrindavan. For those who have eyes, we think there is no greater object of vision. So this is the Sanskrit phrases, a couple of Sanskrit phrases here are very nice. The very first word is akshanvatam. Akshanvatam means of those who have eyes, and phalam means the fruit. Literally the fruit. So Krishna is the fruit of those who have eyes. So just like one who has apple trees gets apples. So one who has eyes should see Krishna. That's it. Eyes are meant for seeing Krishna. Nothing else should be the fruit of your eyesight, according to the gopis. So that's very beautiful. And then they say, idam na param. So this idam means this na param. Param means superior, like param drishvanivat, the higher taste. There's nothing superior to this. Nothing compares to this. Nothing else is worth seeing. Yeah. So like that, and then anurakta kataksha. That's in the last line. Anurakta means love that goes on flowing, ever increasing love, ever increasing affection is conjured up by kataksha, by Krishna's glances, Krishna's sweet glances. So some of the things that they're saying, yeah. And the purport it says, the gopis meant to say, so this is what they meant to say. They didn't actually say what they meant to say, but what they meant to say was, they're talking to each other, "Oh friends, if you simply remain in the shackles of family life in this material world, what will you ever get to see?" Because like I said, they have these social constraints. Some of them are married, either their husbands or their in-laws, or their, if they're not married, their own parents. They're all blocked from going to see Krishna. So they're saying to each other, "Oh, this family life is just like a shackles. We're just locked here in the prison that we can't go to see Krishna. If we remain here forever, you know, what will we ever get to see? The Creator has granted us these eyes, so let us go and see Krishna." And just to make sure that their family members, just in case they overhear these words and disapprove, they say that to see Krishna, they say this word, akshanpatam phalam, that for anyone who has eyes, the fruit of seeing those is Krishna. That to see Krishna is the goal for all persons, not just us. It's not just that we want to see Krishna and perfect our eyes, but Krishna is the object for everybody's vision. This is just a general state. We're just making a general statement. Nothing special about us, no. Like that. So they're trying to cover for themselves. Then the next verse. "Dressed in a charming variety of garments upon which their garlands rest, and decorating themselves with peacock feathers, lotuses, lilies, newly grown mango sprouts, and clusters of flower buds." So again, all the forest decorations. "Krishna and Balaram shine forth magnificently among the assembly of cowherd boys." So here also in this verse, they're also covering for themselves, because they're saying, they're mentioning Balaram and the cowherd boys, in case anybody thinks that, you know, they're talking about Krishna. We're actually talking about all the cowherd boys and how they're all very beautiful. You know, Balaram also, he also dresses nicely and decorates himself with flowers. So we're just appreciating everyone, you know, in a platonic sense here.
Is anyone in love with Balaram?
Well, Balaram has his own gopis.
Yeah. Where do they talk?
What's that?
Where do they talk about that?
There's an instance after Krishna leaves Vrindavan, then Balaram goes back to Vrindavan, and he has pastimes with his gopis during that time. There's some descriptions of that.
Oh, isn't there a rasa dance with Balaram too?
Yeah, Balaram, yeah, he has all these things with his gopis. All right, but these are Krishna's gopis, but they're just mentioning Balaram so that people don't think that they're in love with Krishna or anything like that. So, text 9. "My dear gopis," so these few verses here, actually the verses in this chapter, they're spoken by specific gopis or specific groups of gopis. So because the gopis all have different relationships with Krishna, and they each have their own, you know, moods towards Krishna, and also obstacles to seeing Krishna. So these first few verses are spoken by those gopis who are married and whose husbands won't allow them to go to see Krishna. Even later when the rasa dance takes place, these ones become blocked and they end up having to expand themselves to see Krishna. So they have some additional impediments to overcome. So they're really in this mood of, you know, we're so unfortunate that we can't see Krishna. So text 9. "My dear gopis, what auspicious activities must the flute have performed to enjoy the nectar of Krishna's lips independently and leave only a taste for us gopis, for whom that nectar is actually meant? The forefathers of the flute, the bamboo trees, shed tears of pleasure. His mother, the river, on whose bank the bamboo was born, feels jubilation, and therefore her blooming lotus flowers are standing like hair on her body." So they're seeing the flute as so fortunate because the flute is there with Krishna, in Krishna's arms, touching Krishna's lips practically. And also because the parents of the flute are very happy. You know, the family is very supportive of the flute's relationship with Krishna. It says here that the mother, the river, is the mother of the bamboo, because the bamboo grows out of the river. At least that's the way they see it. So the mother feels jubilation when her son, the flute, is in contact with Krishna's lips. And the forefathers of the flute, the bamboo trees, are also shedding tears of pleasure. So they're thinking, why is it that our mothers and our fathers and our guardians, or whatever, are not happy? Why are they not blessing us and shedding tears of jubilation when we, because of our love for Krishna? Okay, now the next verse is spoken by Lalita Devi to Srimati Radharani. And she says, O friend, Vrindavan is spreading the glory of the earth, having obtained the treasure of the lotus feet of Krishna, the son of Devaki. The peacocks dance madly when they hear Govinda's flute, and when other creatures see them from the hilltops, they all become stunned. So this verse, it said, was spoken when they heard the flute. Then Lalita Devi remembers that one day when they're walking out in the forest or in the fields nearby, and they see the imprint, they see the Krishna's footprint on the ground, and Krishna's feet are marked with all those different auspicious symbols that are unique to him alone. So when they see that, she remembers how Radharani and all the gopis became ecstatic on seeing that footprint. So she's thinking about the pleasure of the earth, and how fortunate it is that the earth is constantly being touched by Krishna's lotus feet. And remember how way back in the beginning of the 10th canto, like the beginning of the Krishna book, it's talking about how the earth was overburdened with the weight of all of these demons who had taken birth as kings, and their sinful activities were, you know, weighing down on the earth who was having to support them. So then Mother Earth took the form of a cow, and she approached Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes. Please, you know, relieve this burden. I can't take it anymore. It's too much. Get rid of these demons. And they all went to Lord Vishnu, and Vishnu said, don't worry, soon I'm coming. I'm coming as Krishna. And so now Krishna's there. And so the gopis are thinking, just imagine how much relief the earth is feeling. I've been being burdened for so long by these demons, and now being touched by Krishna's lotus feet. And so they're comparing themselves, like, we are burdened with the pain of separation from Krishna. We're burdened by all these social restraints. We're burdened by our own shyness, that we can't associate with Krishna, that we can't put Krishna's, we can't touch Krishna's feet, but the earth can. She's so fortunate. And all these other creatures also are fortunate. Partisartivru?
Is it explicitly addressed that Lalita is speaking this to Radharani? Because I thought that, you know, the specific gopis were not mentioned.
It's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam itself, but the Acharyas mention it. They somehow have this insight. So, yeah, it says that this is Lalita speaking to Radharani.
Are there names mentioned in the Bhagavatam, verses, ever?
No, not directly, just indirectly. You know, there's a couple of verses where Radharani's name is mentioned, but it's indirectly, like part of another word, Aradhanam, that, you know, the one who is most perfect in worshiping the Lord. But the Acharyas say that that's as close as Shukadeva Goswami gets to mentioning Radharani's name. So Shukadeva Goswami, in some of these verses too, he's having to really tone down his descriptions, because Maharaj Parikshit is counting on him to narrate Krishna's pastimes. And if he would be mentioning the names of Radharani and the other gopis at this point in the Bhagavatam, he would never finish the leelas. He would just become stunned in ecstasy, in the same way that the gopis are becoming stunned in ecstasy. And it says that even the animals are becoming stunned in ecstasy. And he wouldn't be able to finish even the Vrindavan Leela, what to speak of getting to Mathura, Dwarka, and, you know, the later cantos. So he's trying to, you know, just push it down. So, yeah. It's the occupation.
I heard in a Radhana Swami lecture that Parikshit Maharaj's son was nearby with kirtan instruments, so that when Shukadeva Goswami did slip into ecstasy, they would play kirtan to bring him out of it. They were counting on him to speak.
I never heard that, but yeah, I mean, it makes sense. The Shukadeva is he's in the he's more connected with Madhurya Rasa. So these Madhurya Rasas are Madhurya Rasa Leelas, you know, the gopis' Leelas with Krishna are challenging for him in that way. Okay. So not only are the gopis profoundly affected by hearing Krishna's flute, but so are the animals. So now they're going to go into explaining how the different animals are affected. So she says, blessed are all these foolish deer because they have approached Maharaj Nanda's son, who is gorgeously dressed and is playing on his flute. Indeed, both the doe and the bucks worship the Lord with looks of love and affection. So here, the gopis are bringing out these points because, well, for one thing, they're saying these foolish deer have approached Krishna. So they're thinking, how is it that these, you know, animals, they're just animals, and they're approaching Krishna. And here we are, intelligent human beings, and we can't approach them the way they have. And not only that, but they approach them together with their husbands. They're so fortunate. They don't need to hide or make some, strategy to try to make Krishna slip away or whatever. They just walk right up there together with their husbands. You know, like imagine if we could just go together peacefully with our husbands and go see Krishna. And if our husbands could have equal appreciation for Krishna as we do, and appreciate and support our relationship with Krishna the way the bucks do to the does. So yeah, they say, on the other hand, our husbands are jealous of Krishna. And because of their lack of devotion to him, they cannot even stand to smell his fragrance. They mention here his fragrance. So then, therefore, what is the use of our lives? They're lamenting. Krishna's beauty and character create a festival for all women. Indeed, when the demigods' wives, flying in airplanes with their husbands, catch sight of him and hear his resonant flute song, their hearts are shaken by Cupid, and they become so bewildered that the flowers fall out of their hair. So here, the gopis are. The situation is that the demigods have these flower airplanes that they fly around, and they can travel, you know, between different planets and things. So it says that these demigod women are sitting on the laps of their demigod husbands, and yet the demigoddesses become agitated with love for Krishna by hearing his flute. So the gopis are they're citing this in order to say, well, how can anyone blame us? We have husbands, but when we hear Krishna's flute, we become agitated. That same thing happens to the demigoddesses. You know, we're just lowly cowherd women. If the demigoddesses cannot control themselves, even on the laps of their husbands, by hearing Krishna's flute, then who, what to speak of us? No one can blame us. So, yeah. And they said that the demigods, when they see their wives' attraction to Krishna, they don't become envious. They actually they take their wives to go and see Krishna. So they're thinking, what's wrong with these husbands? You know, they shouldn't be like that. They shouldn't be like this. This is not the way it should be. Therefore, they're saying that the deer, although they're inferior, they're better off than we. And the demigoddesses are also fortunate, but we ourselves, we are just the most unfortunate people. So now they're going to talk about the cows, how the cows respond when they hear Krishna's flute. Using their upraised ears as vessels, the cows are drinking the nectar of the flute song flowing out of Krishna's mouth. The calves, their mouths full of milk from their mother's moist nipples, stand still as they take Govinda within themselves to their tear-filled eyes and embrace him within their hearts. So when the cows, you know, the cows' ears, they normally kind of, you know, can't do this. They sort of flop down. And when they hear Krishna's flute, then they zoop, they turn upward, like to try to, you know, like you see animals like dogs, when they hear some noise, they'll perk up their ears. So the cows, they perk up their ears and they turn them so that the maximum amount of that sound is caught in their ears because it's like a nectar. It's like they're drinking the nectar of the sound of Krishna's flute after catching it in the cups of their ears and then just drinking it. And then the calves, so I have experience of cow, because when we were in Vrindavan, we had a cow and we had a calf. And the calf, the highlight of the calf's day is being able to drink milk from his mother. That's like his moment of bliss, you know, some moments of bliss while he's sucking there. So there's nothing that's going to stop him from drinking that milk. But when the calf, in this case, when Krishna plays the flute and the calves hear it, then they just become so stunned. They're in the middle of sucking the milk from the cow and they become stunned and they just stop. And they were already sucking, so the milk's flowing and all the milk that was in their mouth just leaks out the side of their mouth. It's just like dribbling down their face because they're stunned. They can't swallow it. And then they're just embracing Krishna within their hearts. Yeah, we don't have a lot of time yet. I'll try to cover these remaining verses quickly. Oh, mother, in this forest, all the birds. So now the birds. The birds have risen onto the beautiful branches of the trees to see Krishna. With closed eyes, they are simply listening in silence to the sweet vibrations of the flute, and they are not attracted by any other sound. Surely these birds are on the same level as great sages. So they're compared to like sages in samadhi, because they're in the forest and they're closing their eyes and they're just completely motionless and silent, which is unusual for birds, because birds are usually making some little noise, they move around. But these birds are like sages, because they're just like transformed by ecstasy. They're kind of dumbstruck by hearing Krishna's flute. Then what to speak of animate creatures, like the animals and the birds. Even the inanimate things in Vrindavan are affected. So now he's going to talk about the rivers. When the rivers hear the flute song of Krishna, their minds begin to desire him. And thus the flow of their current is broken and their waters are agitated, moving around in whirlpools. Then with the arms of their waves, the rivers embrace Murari's lotus feet and holding onto them, present offerings of lotus flowers. So the river is normally just flowing without ever stopping flowing. But when Krishna plays its flute, the water doesn't want to leave. It doesn't want to keep flowing. It wants to stay right there where Krishna is. And so it starts swirling in whirlpools. It's like trying to stop itself from flowing down. So it's swirling. And then also that's swirling because the new water is coming in, but it also doesn't want to go. So the whirlpool is going on and more water is coming in. And so the water, it just overflows in that particular spot, which is, you know, closest proximity to Krishna. And it overflows. And then it overflows in such a way that it flows right over Krishna's feet. And that way it embraces Krishna's feet, washes Krishna's feet. And then that, you know, the dust of Krishna's lotus feet becomes mixed with it. And the water, the way it becomes even more ecstatic. And then the lotus flower, and so the lotus flowers break off. And when the waves go over to Krishna, then it offers those lotus flowers to Krishna's lotus feet. So it's very beautiful how even the river, like the Yamuna, even the river wants to serve Krishna in this mood of conjugal love. Because in Vrindavan, actually, the Madhurya rasa is prominent. And all the other rasas, everybody in Vrindavan is somehow touched by Madhurya Ras. Even the elderly, the coward women, the coward boys, somehow they assist in their own ways, you know, without, they maintain their own rasas with Krishna, but they somehow assist the conjugal ras in different ways. You know, like how Mother Yashoda, she arranges for Radharani to always cook for Krishna. And the coward boys, how they sometimes deliver messages, or they have these, you know, play these playful teasing games with the gopis along with Krishna. So now they're going to talk about the clouds. In the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, Lord Krishna is continually vibrating his flute as he herds all the animals of Raj, even under the full heat of the summer sun. Seeing this, the cloud in the sky has expanded himself out of love. He is rising high and constructing out of his own body with this multitude of flower-like droplets of water, an umbrella for the sake of his friend. So here the cloud is acting in a friendly way. The cloud wants to serve Krishna. So the cloud hears the sound of the flute and looks down and says, oh, there's Krishna playing his flute, but it's a hot, sunny day. I should make some shade for him. So then the cloud expands in such a way, arranges the water droplets in such a way that it makes a perfect little umbrella over Krishna's head. So, yeah. In the same way, we should try to be inspired to serve Krishna, that, you know, to be Krishna's friend in this way and reciprocate with Krishna's friendship. So the clouds, they want to protect Krishna and the coward boys from the sun. And so they give their lives for Krishna. They use their own bodies in the service of Krishna, cloud bodies. And similar way, we should also want to use our bodies in the service of Krishna, dedicate our lives to Krishna to relieve his distress. Of course, what is Krishna's distress? Well, we see in Lord Chaitanya that Lord Chaitanya is always in anxiety over the suffering of the fallen souls. So like the clouds rose up and, you know, expanded themselves, gathered their resources to try to relieve Krishna's distress, that we need to also rise to the occasion and gather whatever resources we have to try to expand the Krishna consciousness movement and give shelter to all souls, just as the cloud gave shelter to Krishna and his coward boyfriends. So, also the spiritual master is compared to a cloud in the Guru Vastika, right? That he's just like a cloud pouring water on the blazing forest fire material existence. So we should also try to have that cloud-like quality. Okay, then there's just a few more verses here. Text 17, the Aborigine women of the Vrindavan area become disturbed by lust when they see the grass marked with reddish kumkum powder. Endowed with the color of Krishna's lotus feet, this powder originally decorated the breasts of his beloveds. And when the Aborigine women smear it on their faces and breasts, they give up all their anxiety. Then text 18, of all the devotees, this Govardhan Hill is the best. We just had Govardhan Puja, so this is nice. Oh, my friends, this hill supplies Krishna and Balaram, along with their calves, cows, and cowherd friends, with all kinds of necessities, water for drinking, very soft grass, caves, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. In this way, the hill offers respects to the Lord. Being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant. This was the verse, actually, that was our Bhagavatam class here at Krishna House yesterday was based on. So we heard a long explanation of that already. So I'll go to the next one. My dear friends, as Krishna and Balaram pass through the forest with their cowherd friends leading their cows, they carry ropes to bind the cow's rear legs at the time of milking. When Lord Krishna plays on the flute, the sweet music causes the moving living entities to become stunned and the non-moving trees to tremble with ecstasy. These things are certainly very wonderful. So whatever moving living entities, they stop moving. And whatever living entities normally don't move, like the stones and the trees, then they start moving. So everything is going topsy-turvy when Krishna plays his flute. And then the last verse, thus narrating to one another the playful pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he wandered about in the Vrindavan forest, the gopis became fully absorbed in thoughts of him. So this was, Prabhupada says that this is the perfect example of Krishna consciousness, to somehow or other remain always engrossed in thoughts of Krishna. And the vivid example is the gopis. So Lord Chaitanya said that no one can worship the Supreme Lord by any method that is better than the method of the gopis. The gopis weren't born in Brahmin families, Kshatriya families, they were Vaishyas. And they weren't very well educated, but their only purpose was to remain always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And this is the highest aspiration for any living being. So we should try to absorb ourselves in. And it's Krishna's flute is non-different than the sound of the Vedas. And the essence of all the Vedas is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So when we chant Hare Krishna in Kirtan or in Japa, then that's non-different from hearing Krishna's flute. We can meditate on that. And when we chant purely, then it will have this effect on us. It will captivate us. We'll be captivated by the sound of the holy name, and our hearts will be transformed. And we'll experience this similar, of course, you know, we're very lowly compared to the gopis, but we can experience a similar kind of ecstasy where our consciousness is completely lifted up to another level, and we forget about everything else, kind of like that kirtan last night where I where the kirtan went to like past midnight. And yeah, and I previously had been thinking I should get to bed early because tomorrow is my guru's Vyasa Puja, and I have to write my prepare my offering, which I had started but hadn't finished, and then I have a meeting in the afternoon and so many things to do. And but somehow or other, when that kirtan got going, everything else just disappeared from existence. So
you went through so many moods, Prabhupada Priya. There's a blue section.
I don't know what happened. Don't ask me any questions about that. I don't have answers. But yeah, so it's all there.
You made up your own melodies.
We can experience this ecstasy in the chanting of Hare Krishna. Okay, I'm going to let you go now because Madhavrupa is starting
Thank
the Sharanagati Saturday program, and you can put this into practical application by getting absorbed in that sweet kirtan. All right, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Krishna's transcendental flute playing ki jai, Hare Krishna ki jai, Gaur Premanandi.
Hare Krishna.